Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of mind power. And today we're going to be talking about mind power, especially when it comes to those that want to go to college, the big C. We have a wonderful gentleman with us today, Mr. Bob Newman, who has been involved with helping to work with young people, actually anybody that might be interested in going to college, so that they can succeed at this tremendous investment of time, money, and hopefully a good education in the process. I want to welcome Robert Newman. Do you mind if I call you Bob?
I would appreciate it, yes.
Well, I am really intrigued with the fact that you have been so dedicated to this arena, because in today's world, and of course this is my 50 cents worth of bias,
yes,
it is awesome to even think about getting a kid to college, number one.
Yeah.
And number two, the cost, it's as if you want to say, okay, let's just keep our fingers crossed and maybe they're going to qualify for a scholarship. And
right,
maybe we'll be able to afford it. I mean,
right,
it is just an incredible period when you think of, what was it, during the Second World War, you had your vets that were going to college, and everybody got so excited about it. It was the big thing to do. And
sure, the GI
now,
Bill.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
It is, yes. I was just talking with a student today, a student who's just beginning high school, and one of the things that I wanted to emphasize was the cost of a college education, thereby making college seem even more important. And so we were looking at some of the schools he's interested in, and I was looking at annual tuition fees of $25,000, $30,000, $35,000, $40,000 a year.
Ouch.
You know, and then add to that another $7,000, $8,000, $9,000, $10,000 for room and board. When you think of what that comes out to be after 4 years, you have to say this is a tremendous investment. And when people see those numbers, one of the two things I want to say to them, and first of all, if you've got a very good student, that student is going to qualify for scholarships and for financial aid.
Mm-hmm.
So when they look at the total numbers, they have to consider that they might get scholarships and they'll get aid of some kind. Second thing I want to emphasize to students is the great difference in earning power that a college student has over a person who does not go to college.
That's true.
And over a lifetime, right now, for example, if you looked at two people retiring after a lifetime of work, and one had a college degree and the other one did not, the one with a college degree will have earned about $1 million more in the lifetime than the person without. So in the long term, a student with a college degree can say that they're going to earn at the very least about twice as much as the person without with just a high school diploma. So cost is an important thing to consider up front, but we also have to consider the life effect on the student.
I agree, but this is a family a situation,
yep,
that has to be looked at. And most,
yep,
young families today, the husband and wife, if they have one or two children, or maybe they have more, they say, wow, we've got to start saving.
Yeah.
Right now, I know of one young couple. They have two beautiful girls, extremely intelligent, and they're just little people. They're not even able to talk yet.
Yes.
And mom and dad already have said, well, we've got to streamline everything. We've,
yes,
got to cut everything down. Let's not have any debts. I mean,
right,
here are two young adults that are thinking this way, and I'm going, my gracious.
Yes.
And these kids, like I said, aren't even talking yet.
Yes. Yeah.
And they're already making these plans, going through this patterning of sacrifice. Let's talk about some facts here. And I really like your book, by the way. It's titled, Are You Ready for College? I love the way you have used illustrations right at the beginning of the book. This is no game. This is something that the young person really needs to understand what's going on here. I was talking with a young person in our family just yesterday, and I was so thrilled. They love to read, and I said, this is so important because you, and they like math, and they like science, and I said, this is great. You've got all of these interests, and reading is so important. So it's terrific because this is a 10-year-old kid, but already they're trying to make the kids make decisions about college at 10 years of age, and this kid could no more do that than a man in the moon. He likes to go fishing at this time in his life, and he says that that's exciting. But let's talk about some facts. 25% of freshmen drop out altogether or change schools to find an easier college.
Yeah.
You have a chart in here where you give information about how long students take to graduate from college. 4 years, 37%. 5 or 6 years, 26%. 7 years or never graduate, 40%. I mean, these are amazing numbers. Where do you get these statistics?
The statistics come from the Higher Education Research Institute at the University of California, Los Angeles. And there are other places that do this kind of research, but that's my main source of information. And, in fact, it researches high school and college students from all different points of view, as well as everything that has to do with college education, from professors' salaries, you know, to just attitudes of high school students, for example. But that's my source.
I looked at some of your stats here regarding study time in high school.
Yes, that's
and
discouraging.
You've got to share that because this just blew me away, especially when you make the comparison of what study time is going to be in college. So let's talk about that for a moment.
Sure. It's the number of hours that students study in high school has just gone down dramatically over the last 10 and 15 years. And what we see now is that students' study time in high school can be as low as 5 hours a week, 6 hours a week, and some compared it to the number of hours a student studies in middle school, and they've noticed that high school students really aren't studying any more in high school than they studied in middle school. Those low number of study hours have to be put up against what is usually the number of hours that colleges will tell students, new college students, the number of hours that they're expected to study each week. And the rule of thumb for college students is you have to study about 2 to 3 hours for every credit hour you're taking. And college freshmen usually take about 14, 15, 16 credits, something like that. And so you work out the numbers and you say, well, you know, a college student in the freshman year already is supposed to be studying 30 to 40 hours a week. Well, if they come out of their senior year in high school, you know, studying fewer than 10 hours a week, that's just going to make them seem like they're running into a glass wall by the time they get to college. They don't even know it's there until they hit it. And they not only don't they know how to make that transition, because many of them just simply throw their hands up and say, well, I can't study this number of hours. But that's one of the main reasons why I wrote the book, because I'm telling students, you have to, through high school, you have to gradually increase the number of hours that you study a week, so that by the time you get to college, you're used to studying at least 20 to 25 hours a week. Now, if you talk to most high school seniors, they'll say, you know, that's ridiculous. But, it may be ridiculous in terms of what high school seniors are typically doing these days, but certainly not ridiculous in terms of what preparation they need for college.
You also had research that you bring out in your book about how teenagers today are using their free time. Now, I bumped into, in my neighborhood, a retired teacher.
Yes.
That was really very upset that there was not, that schools in this area are starting to extend the year. They are adding more time. She said, apparently the objective is to make school year-round.
Yeah.
And I personally don't see anything wrong with that because we're not in a farming, agro
environment
anymore. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. There can be break times. They have enough break times during the year as it is.
I agree
with you. I don't think that that's bad. But what's bothering me is that when you're talking about students not studying, and I have a question for you. What do you think needs to be done relative to improving this? Because I can remember times in school, I mean, we were tested, and if you didn't put in the study time, you didn't pass the grade. So the teachers were very strict. You had homework.
Right.
And, oh, my goodness, I can remember my friends and I think, are we ever going to get through this homework? And maybe we couldn't go out and play or do whatever it was.
Yeah.
Of course, we didn't have video games. But you said here, teenagers today spend nearly 4 hours a day watching television and video. They may be on the Internet for 2 hours. They listen to their music 1.5. I mean, they've got this stuff wired to their ears almost, and I don't have anything against it. But how do you buck that? What is a parent to do, and how can the parents and the school system work together?
Well, you talked about this young family earlier, and I try to emphasize to parents, and I don't care how old their kids are, if the parents are interested in having their kids go to college, I say to them, you must constantly be saying in your home that education and learning and school and homework is a very important aspect of your life, and we have to respect this. We have to respect your education. We have to take it seriously, and when we look at the important things in a student's a young student's life, I say, at the top of the list, we're saying your family is important, and you have to work with your family to have a good family. The second thing I say to students is your health. You have to look out after your health. You have to take care of yourself. You have to try to avoid all the problems of health that young people have today. And the third thing has to be education. You have to find a place for education among the important things that you do. After education, we can talk about having time to do all of the fun things and all of the activities that students have, from the Internet to the cell phone to television and so forth. And as you say, we don't want to take away their fun. And they have, you know, so many more activities that are pressing upon them, you know, certainly than I had when I was young. But we have to make sure that all of those enjoyable activities do not squeeze out the time in their life from day to day, where education now has disappeared. It loses its importance. If it loses its importance, then they're not going to develop as students, and they're not going to develop their learning skills. They're not going to develop their study skills. So that's what I say to parents. I say, make sure you're talking about education regularly, just around the house, and make sure you're speaking of it positively. Kids are going to bring home problems from school. Oh, I don't like studying this. Oh, my teacher, you know, is too hard, and so forth. Don't fall into the trap of saying to your children, oh, yes, I know how it was in school. I didn't like this teacher, and I didn't like that teacher, and I didn't like history, and so on. You can't set a negative example for your students. It has to be positive. It has to be positive. And so in order to get your students ready to be the best they can, it really does start out, it starts in the home. Its foundation is in the home, where education is respected as one of the important and positive things that a young person does, and it has to have a higher rank than all of these other enjoyable things that they do for recreation.
I've known of some families that really had conferences and would sit down with the young people and say, now you have a choice. This is what we're going to do. The education is first.
Yes.
And your grades are very important. We
yes.
want you to do the very best you can.
Yes.
I think of how important it was for these families to make this decision, and I think of how many young people I'm aware of today that are taking college preparation classes.
Yes.
And they're getting their associate's degree before they graduate from high school.
Sure.
But I'll tell you, I know of one young lady who was brilliant. I mean, she got straight A's. She goes into college. She flunks her
yes.
first semester. She is totally in a panic. She was unprepared.
Right.
For
right.
the responsibility. Eventually, her family, they insisted on her continuing her education. And what it was is that she had gone into a very large school. It's UW up here, where classes were, you know, a couple of hundred students a class and this type
yep.
of thing. And she had come from an environment where there was this sense of association with the classes she was in, the teachers she was with, and here she was in this different environment.
Yep.
She went into deep shock, so they finally got her into another college, and that was fine. But there is this huge transition. How, I mean, here are all these kids now taking these advanced college courses. I know of another family who's got a young man. He's brilliant. He's brilliant in music. He's a straight-A student. And I think, unlike this young lady I mentioned, he is a different personality type, but he even doesn't have a clue. I think he's just sort of thinking that it's going to be not that difficult. And what do you do? I mean, they're taking these college prep classes, and then they get into college and they go, oh, my God, what have I gotten myself into?
Yes. There's another set of of statistics that's important for parents to know and for students to know as well, that in the last 20 years to 25 years, the number of grades of A that pre-college students earn, the number has dramatically changed. If you looked about 20 or 25 years ago, about 20% of the students who went to college had grades from B plus through A. 20% 25 years ago. Now that those percentages have flipped upside down, so that 80% of the students going to college, 80% have grades of B plus through A.
Oh, my heavens.
That's a cumulative grade point average. That grade inflation that is so terrible in high schools these days, it does a couple of things. First, with regard to the student, like the young lady you mentioned, who goes to college and just, you know, is shocked. Well, she goes to college thinking that she's an A student in every subject.
Mm-hmm.
And she's not. She's a very good student. We won't argue that at all. But where she thinks that she can do A work in all of her subjects, she finds in college that because now courses are taught differently, much harder, much more work, she finds that she's not an A student anymore, and especially in terms of the fewer hours that she's been studying to get those
mm-hmm.
A's.
Mm-hmm.
You see? So yes. We have to emphasize to parents that grade inflation goes against differentiating students. And if they're not differentiated, the students think that they're working at their highest potential and that this potential is good for college, but they're not working at their highest potential. In fact, they really don't know what their how good their potential is and how good their ability is. They can't mm-hmm. make those differentiations. And what grade inflation also does is that to some extent it cancels out striving for excellence.
Mm-hmm.
If most of the students, and especially the pre-college students, think that they're all excellent, well, they don't have to strive for excellence. Do you see?
Yes.
So
yes.
Grade inflation is one of the most damaging things that's occurring in high school today for the education of high school students and for preparation for college.
You have some very interesting material in your book that students can use. And what I like about your book is that you really oriented it towards the student being responsible.
Yes.
And I think we've gotten so far away from that on so many levels, with adults as well as kids, that
right.
it's refreshing to see this, because I know adults could use some of this stuff. It's like your weekly activity map that you have in the book. Why did you design this?
First of all, I wanted to speak to students. I wanted them to know that there was somebody like me who had worked with college students, for over 30 years, and that I had experience directly with college students, and therefore, in writing the book, I wanted to be speaking to high school students. I wanted them to feel that there was a voice here just for them. And that's why I wrote it to be as personal as I possibly could, as well as being as positive as I possibly could. But there are definitely certain philosophies here about education that I want to emphasize. And one of the philosophies is that, first of all, not only is your education important while you are a student in some type of school, high school, college, law school, medical school, not only are you a student during those periods of time, but you're a student for the rest of your life, because
yes.
you have to be learning for the rest of your life. In whatever job you have, you're going to have to be learning regularly. In fact, if you look at some of the predictions that are done by, for example, the U.S. Department of Education and people who study employment, they say that young people today, looking ahead to a whole lifetime of careers, might typically have as many as three or four different careers in their lifetime, because things change so rapidly.
Mm-hmm.
We're so far away from a kind of lifestyle where a person would have one job and one set of skills, and she worked those jobs and skills throughout their life. That's just not going to occur with these young people who are looking further into the 21st century here. So I'm saying to them, you are always a student. So make sure that while you are in school as a student, you become the best kind of student that you can be. Secondly, another philosophical premise is you're responsible for your education. You're the one who has to do the work. Now, granted, the person in the front of the classroom is presenting knowledge to you and is giving you directions on how you can understand this knowledge and the kind of homework that you do. And unfortunately, you're going to have very good teachers who stimulate you and enlighten you, and then you're going to have some teachers who may not be as good. Well, again, that's sort of like the life of being a student. But in the end, you have to, as a student, say to yourself, this is my responsibility here.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, my history teacher may not be the most exciting person in the world, your challenge here as a student is not dealing with your history professor, your history teacher. It's dealing with history.
Mm-hmm.
So let's learn as much about history as we can, or learn as much about foreign language as we can. This is all knowledge that is the student's responsibility here. And not only do they have to have the study skills and develop those in high school in order to perform well in college, but they have to have this amount of knowledge that they're supposed to be gaining in high school. They have to take that amount of knowledge with them to college, because college professors are going to expect that they've studied history before, that they've studied biology before, and so forth. So, again, I'm telling students, just consider the fact that as a learner, you have to keep on building up the amount of knowledge that you have, and this is your responsibility, in a sense, regardless of what the teacher in the front of the room tells you.
And I think, too, when you're in college, there are many benefits from being in college. If you have those people around you, not only to support you, but also to make you aware of the fact that this is your job.
Yes, it is.
You are in there. You are in there to get that degree because you want to live a better life.
Right.
So
right.
It's up, again, we get down to the personal responsibility, and you have a wonderful chapter on talking. And I know we're getting close to being out of time, but this to me is so important because one of my big concerns with a lot of young people, they have gotten into the electronic age. It doesn't mean that these young people aren't intelligent. They are.
They are.
But they have forgotten, they have not been educated about the value of face-to-face communication.
Yes.
And there is a whole different level of people communication that they're just not getting. And then when they graduate from college and they go out into the world and they're doing interviews, and they wonder why people aren't interested in them.
Right, exactly. and I emphasize talking for
yes,
those
do.
Reasons. Not only in the classroom and forming a relationship with a teacher, or in high school when you have a relationship with a counselor, you have to be able to talk. There has to be communication, you know, between the student and the teacher and the counselor, for example. Not only in those face-to-face communications, but really a classroom situation is a special kind of social situation. Students are supposed to be contributing in that classroom to the discussion, and in order to make those contributions, they have to be able to talk. That's one level of learning right there, talking
mm-hmm.
in the classroom about the subject with the other students and with the teacher.
Oh, now, very much so.
Very much so. Now, I don't know the extent to which high school teachers will grade students on their ability to talk in the classroom, but I know that in many college courses, talking in the classroom, contributing to the discussion, is actually going to affect a student's grade.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then students are inevitably going to have to make some transitions from high school to college that are even other than academic ones. They have to get used to, you know, living away from home. They have to get used to, you know, being in a residence hall. They have to get used to really being on their own. Well, one of the mistakes that college students make is that when their lives as a college student start impinging upon their job as a student, they have to go and talk to somebody about how to get back on track. And if they don't feel confident about themselves as talkers, they're not going to involve themselves in these conversations. Academic advising in college, a lot of colleges take that advising seriously, so that they want students to check in regularly with their academic advisors and talk about their progress. Well, once again, if they don't know how to talk, they're not going to get anything out of those discussions. And then as they develop, as they should, as talkers, that's going to have a great effect on what happens after college. For example, let's talk about a pre-medical student who's trying to get into medical school. Well, they have to go in for interviews, you know, in order to qualify for admission. If they go out into the working world, they're going to have to talk to people at, during interviews in order to qualify for a job. If they don't have those talking skills, they're going to find themselves inhibited not only as students, but as potential employees.
No question about that. Well, Bob, I'll tell you, this has been wonderful.
Well, I've enjoyed it very much.
This has just been great. Are you ready for college? Now, let me tell you something. For those of you that are adults that are listening to the show, and you have been thinking about going back to college, this would be a good book for you to read, too. Because college has changed the whole, so much has evolved so fast that I think so many people are just feeling like, gee whiz, maybe I just ought to go flip hamburgers, and they go, no, that's not going to work for me. I want to have a degree. All right, what is it going to take to get it? Because it is a big commitment financially, emotionally, spiritually, intellectually. It's a big thing. Dr. Newman's book is excellent. Are You Really Ready for College? And he has a website, areyoureallyreadyforcollege.com. So if you know of anyone that's in your family that's going to have to look at this, this is a must-have book. It's easy to read, well laid out, so many good suggestions. And if you're a parent or if you have members of your family who are parents and they're looking at things and they're just going, what am I going to do? I'm already overwhelmed. This is a step-by-step that can really, really help. Dr. Newman, I want to thank you so much for being my guest today.
Thank you very much, Donna. It's a pleasure.
This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. Check it out. AreYouReadyForCollege.com. This book is worth every penny you pay for it, and then some. It'll really benefit somebody that you know, maybe even you yourself. This is Donna. We're taking a break. We'll be back in just a moment.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Telephone number is 888 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Now, if you've never talked with me on the air before, all I need from you is your first name or your initial, and then I'll also like to know where you're calling in from, what part of the country or the world, and then after that, just relax. Let me tell you what I perceive, and then you're welcome to ask me a question about anything that may cross your mind. So again, phone lines are open, 888-815-9756. Quickly, I do want to remind you, tomorrow we have got world-renowned sci-fi author Bill Nolan. Now, I've known Bill Nolan for years, and I was out of touch with him, and I found that he moved to the Pacific Northwest, very excited about this, and oh my goodness, this man who wrote Logan's Run, which is a sci-fi classic, believe me, it's just an amazing thing. Well, he's just done so much since the last time I chatted with him, and we're going to be talking about his latest book called The Bleeding Edge. Ah, yes, and we're going to be talking about other people who, like himself, have gained renown in the sci-fi area, so I think that you'll find it very interesting. And then I also want to let you know on June 27th, Sunday at 3:30 in the afternoon, Pacific, I'm going to be doing an interview with Denise Barnes. It's going to be done in Nashville, Tennessee. The talk show is titled Differences. I'll be on the air with Denise at 3:30, and we're going to be having a chat. Also, there's more information coming forth. There's a program I'm going to be doing in Orlando, Florida, as well as Birmingham, Alabama. And for those of you that might be in those parts of the country, I want you to know that you'll be able to hear me live. As soon as I have all those details put together, I'll be passing them along to you. Yes, I'm going to be on a number of different programs doing not unlike what I'm doing with you, opening up the phone lines, chatting with people about the tools of the mind and how to be successful with them. Well, if you're wondering about what to do during the summer, let's say you'd like to try something you have never tried before. Well, why not try some treasure hunting? Mm-hmm. Now, there's many different ways of doing so-called treasure hunting, if you will. There's all kinds of things that you can check out. And I'm sure if you're like me, you have seen certain programs on television where there are places in the country where you can go and dig up precious stones. And people have found some phenomenal things. And some of these mines have been owned by families for generations, and they welcome the public in for a very small fee. You, your friends, and family can go together and just have a rollicking good time digging in the dirt and finding some very special items. So what I wanted to do is share with you a little bit of information. If you like gemstones, and again, this is something fun that you've never done before, you can go, as I mentioned, to these different mines, and you can go to a website called gem-collector.com, gem-collector.com, and you're going to be able to find out about different mines. And I'm sure, because you're also savvy on the Internet, you probably could locate them yourself, but it's a very inexpensive way, especially if you've got kids and they're of the ages where they need to be kept busy and you don't mind them getting dirty. This is a safe environment, fun environment. The whole family can participate, and you never know what you're going to find. Also, ancient artifacts. Now, there are collectors and there are collectors. You know, Native Americans were around for thousands and thousands and thousands of years, and many times they left behind items that archaeologists just love to find. Well, Terry Baxter, who has written a book on how to find Indian arrowheads and other ancient artifacts, gives some information. He said, again, go right to the Internet, that wonderful resource, and look up tools that were used by Native Americans in your areas. What a wonderful project for kids for the summer. They can do research and homework right online, and then you can go off to a place and see if you can find something. You can check the ground wherever it is that you can possibly go, and knowing what to look for is very, very important. And he said some tips. If you want to find some artifacts, check fallen trees where roots have gone down into the earth and are causing them to dig up, you know, to come up. Banks of creeks are a good place to find artifacts. And you can, when you find something, let's say you found an arrowhead, or maybe you're in the South somewhere and you find a Civil War, what looks like a Civil War uniform button, or just any kind of thing like that. Well, go to your local museum. Talk to someone at the museum and see what they can tell you about what you found. You know, when it comes to kids, we were talking about education in the beginning, you know, going on to college. But I think the love of learning comes about when you're in environments that say, ask questions. Let's go check something out. What if we find something? How do we find out more about this? It makes life interesting. I think so many times we have stuff that is force-fed us by media. And if we can, if we're going to take an example of anyone, look at the History Detectives program that comes on. They actually have to research things that people provide to them saying, I want to know about this. What can you tell me about it? I have no clue. Aunt Lulu Bill left it to me, and I guess this is a story that goes with it, but I don't know whether it's true or not. So these people go off on a hunt. Well, it's the same thing. Whenever you're taking your family or you're visiting areas of the country, it's good to do a little bit of reading about the place before you go. I've often thought that going, and I've done a little bit of this, I haven't had time to do a whole bunch, but going to different parts of the country and just saying, what is special about this place? Is there anything about agriculture? What is it with history that went on in this part of the country? There are so many things that you can find out so that when you do go into a local museum, wow, you've got all kinds of things to research. And what a great way to stimulate the minds of kids. I had a young member of our family visiting yesterday, and this is a 10-year-old boy. And Cameron is a kid that when I found out that he loves to read, loves math, loves science, I had a stack of books that were just right for him, and he's got a younger brother. And I said, you know what? Take these with you. Take them with you. I even had something on poetry. And he looked at every one of the books. He was excited. He said, I can hardly wait because I have to be on a plane. I can take some of these books with me and I can read them. This is what's important. When the adults around kids, and even when they're around each other, when you can say, wow, do you know about XYZ? Or have you done this? Or well, let's go look this up. Or let's check this out at the library. To me, it's so sad when I talk to people, adults and kids, that know very little about a library, know very little about the fact that at a library you have very well-educated people that if you are looking for something, they can help you out. You have people that are volunteer as tutors. You have people that love to learn. What a great environment to put yourself into. And as adults, it is so important for us to do the same thing. It's so easy to get into a mindset where we go, oh, yeah, right, I know all about this. You don't know all about it. There's a lot of things you don't know. And life is interesting. If you're bored, you need to figure out why you are so boring. Because there's a lot going on in life. Heck, if you don't believe that, volunteer at a homeless shelter. Find out. Get a taste of life. Get away from the television. Get away from a lot of things that cause what I sometimes feel is a brain dead situation. Get out. Ask questions. What is it in my area that's growing? You know, what are deciduous trees that could make a difference in our environment? What can I do? Start asking questions. You know, as you get older, you're not brain dead. You're not supposed to be a fossil. Get interested. If nothing else, get around kids. They'll keep you going. They'll make sure that you are going to be on your toes. It's amazing. It really keeps you alive. But, diamonds, what would you like to do? Well, in Arkansas, there is a crater of diamonds. Yes, actual crater of diamonds. It's a state park, and it's the only public diamond mine in the world. How would you like to find a little bit of the rock? Well, you can do exactly that. Do you know 75,000 diamonds have been found there? 75,000 diamonds. One was 40 carats. One was a 40-carat diamond. Woohoo! What would you do with something like that? Again, it is having an experience unlike anything you've ever had before. So you get a little bit dirty, go back to your hotel room, motel room, take a shower, scrub up, you'll be as good as new, and you can be out at the dig again the next day. So the admission to the park is only $7. You have to bring your own digging tools, or you can rent a kit there. Do you know what? Sometimes they say you can even find diamonds right on the ground, but of course somebody's going to have to tell you how to look for them. You're going to need to know what you're looking for, because they're all not all cut and polished for you. They're going to be in the raw phase. Do you know over 600 diamonds are discovered a year, and whatever you find is yours to keep? And the park rangers, they'll help identify them for you. How do you find out about this? If you want a piece of the rock, go to craterofdiamondsstatepark.com. craterofdiamondsstatepark.com. Few fun places for you to see. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. When we come back, a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and even a recipe for you, so get that pad of paper and pen handy. I'll be right back. Don't forget you can call me at 888-815-9756. We'll be right back.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay only $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 1-800-872-8852. That's 1-800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Gedrose. Buy it today. 1-800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna. Well, as the temps are warming up, usually we want to have food that's somewhat easy to fix and pleasant to eat, but with a lot less stress than what we'd normally want to put ourselves through. So I came across a honey nut cheese that really, for a party, if you wanted to have an appetizer, hey, gift it to yourself. It's something that's light, it's tasty, and it's great for if you wanted a summer, just a nice something for summer dinner, with a little bit of grilled meat or whatever you'd like. But this really can be served about any time, but I especially think during the warmer months, it's absolutely terrific. Now, this is what you're going to need. You're going to need 8 ounces around of brie or Camembert cheese. Now, Camembert does not have a very strong flavor. Brie has a little bit more of strength and flavor, but brie to my taste bud is sort of mild anyway. A quarter of a cup of butter, and then 1 cup of coarsely chopped nuts. It can be walnuts, pecans, almonds, whatever is your favorite nut. You're going to need a cup of that, coarsely chopped, and then 1/2 teaspoon of ground cinnamon, 1/2 teaspoon of ground cinnamon, 1/4 teaspoon of ground nutmeg, 1/4 teaspoon of ground nutmeg, 2 tablespoons of honey, 2 tablespoons of honey. And then, if you want to serve it with bread or with crackers, that's fine, but why not fruit? And to serve it with fruit, just have a couple of apples, and you want to core them, and you want to slice them thinly, and then maybe even have some grapes to go along with it. Just makes a wonderful, wonderful light complement. This is what you're going to need to do. Your butter, you're going to want to melt in a heavy skillet, and you want to stir in your nuts and spices, and then you add the honey. And what you're going to do, you're going to let this cook until it gets bubbly. And over your cheese round, you're going to pour this wonderful mixture. And then, yep, that's all you have to do. Just pour it right over the cheese. It is going to be there ready for dipping. And you can use your fresh apples, you can use your cheese, and you can have some grapes with it. But it's just really light, really easy, and tasty. It's something that is really a pleasure to serve, and people really enjoy it a great deal. It's got a little bit of sweetness to it, and with the brie, it's great. I'll also give you a tip that a friend of mine gave me. If you like cheeses and you especially like brie, she'll take a round of brie and she will put brown sugar on the top of it. She just puts a thick coating of brown sugar. And then she puts it underneath the broiler. Now, she doesn't put it real close to the broiler. She puts it like halfway down in the oven, lets the broiler do its magic on the caramelization of the brown sugar. And then she serves that. Now, of course, the brie within its natural crust is just soft and wonderful. But there is a combination with the sugar and the brie that is absolutely amazing, and people just love it. They absolutely love it. So those are two cheese recipes for you. If you like doing things like that, and it's quick, it's easy, and it is convenient. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like a chat. 888-815-9756. I wanted to share some information that was sent to me. By the way, I want to mention something. If you have a special story, a recipe, or anything that you would like for me to be aware of, including if you have a special story of the paranormal, then send it to me, donna@delphiinternational.com. I always enjoy hearing from you. Send it again to donna@delphiinternational.com. And I neglected to mention that about the book. I'm putting a book together. I'm collecting 100 stories. I'd love to have yours. If it's been an out-of-body experience, a dream that changed your life, precognition, anything that is especially significant to you, I would love to hear your story if you would like to have yourself included in this book. Send it along to me. I would love to have it. John Wooden is a story that someone sent to me, that Coach John Wooden. And, of course, this man, my goodness, my husband speaks of him so highly. I have yet to hear of anyone that hasn't spoken well of this coach. He passed away this month of June, in fact, on June 4th. He was 99 years old when he died. And this is a man that hasn't been beaten by any other coach. No other college basketball coach has ever achieved what he did at UCLA. He won 10 national championships, 7 of them in a row, winning 88 straight games at one stage. He dominated college basketball from the mid-1960s to the 1970s. But he was quite a guy. He had such an impact on his students and on the people that he interacted with. Very down to earth. He was married to his high school sweetheart, and during the Great Depression, he lost all of his life savings. Why? Because the bank went belly up. All of his money was gone. However, he and his wife, his beloved wife, her name was Nell, they started their family, and they were married for 53 years before she passed away. Do you know he did something very special with his wife? He never got over her passing, they said. And on the 21st of each month after she died, he would visit her grave and write a love letter to her. He'd take the love letter, seal it in an envelope, and add it to the others he kept tied with a yellow ribbon and tucked under the pillow that she had slept on. For 25 years, he wrote her love letters. There's about 300 of them. This was a man of deep faith, and he had retired at the age of 64 in 1975. But you know what? His life didn't end. Because he wrote books, he spoke, he was a man that went on coaching in a whole different level. And he was most famous for his pyramid of success that he developed. Life is rich with opportunity, and it's up to us to be able to take what we have been given in the way of gifts and talents and make them polished so that we can pass on a legacy, not unlike Coach Wooden. There's more to his story, but I'll have to share it another time because we are out of time. This is Donna Sebo. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. God bless. Have a fabulous day, and we'll be back. Sci-fi special tomorrow. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.